This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Nationally and locally, this is a huge year for politics, from the race for the White House to the Hamilton County Commission race. And joining us for a preview of the 2016 local, state, and national candidates and elections are Ohio Public Radio and Television Statehouse News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler, WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Later in the show, WVXU reporter Bill Reinhart will join us with a look at what's happening locally. And you can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Karen and Howard, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Howard, as we start out today, I wanted to get your take on this. Earlier this today, President Obama announces gun control efforts that he's going to enact by executive order.
Yes.
What effect do you think this particular issue is going to have on the presidential race?
Well, I think, I mean, obviously, and the Republicans, you know, had started in on this plan even before he had delivered it. The Republican presidential candidates, for the most part, not all of them, are going to find this to be an issue that they can run on in Republican primaries, because the typical Republican primary voter is very conservative and very pro Second Amendment, and you're going to hear a whole lot of rhetoric about, you know, this is just the first step from President Obama trying to take away your guns. And you're going to hear that over and over again from Republican presidential candidates. Now, that may be a smart strategy in terms of Republican primary voters. I'm not so sure it's going to be as effective. Somebody's going to win this Republican nomination, and somebody's going to win a Democratic nomination. There's going to be a campaign this fall, and I'm not sure that running on a pro-gun platform is going to be that effective in a general election campaign.
So if I hear you right, you don't think this has any long-term prospects to it?
Well, obviously, I mean, in particularly like in the urban areas of America, you know, gun violence is a big issue, and people are concerned about it. And I don't think the majority of people want to take away everyone's guns, you know, of law-abiding citizens. But the polling shows clearly that a majority of Americans believe that there should be more in terms of background checks on people buying and selling guns.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And, you know, Karen, Ohio is usually such a hot state during a presidential election anyway. But this year it seems to be even hotter. What are some of the things that are making it so?
Well, I would add that with regard to President Obama's announcement on guns, I got three statements in front of me here, one from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence, one from the Buckeye Firearms Association, so the two polar opposites, essentially, and then also from former Governor Ted Strickland, who's running for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate. And they all agree on one thing here, and that is that Congress hasn't done anything on this issue, and that they are concerned about that, which I think is kind of interesting, that at least there's one area of agreement among all three of these disparate bodies here.
And that's what Democrats can hang their hats on, is, you know, point their finger at Congress and say, look, you didn't do anything.
Yeah. But regarding Ohio and the presidential race, of course, everybody's used to this by now, that Ohio is the big battleground state, the key swing state, whatever you want to use as your terminology this time. But it's really important this year because, you know, we don't have an incumbent running. The last two election cycles for president, Ohioans picked the Democrat, Barack Obama, and the polls show that Hillary Clinton seems to be leading, at least at this point in time, though new polls are constantly coming out. And also you've got the U.S. Senate race. And this year, it's really thought that this is going to be a competitive Senate race, even though there is an incumbent, Rob Portman, who's running. Ted Strickland has been running very competitively against him. And so we'll have to see how that plays out. But certainly that Senate race is one of a few that have been targeted by Republicans and Democrats both as a seat that they feel that they can either Republicans hang on to or Democrats take back.
Yeah, as like Karen says, I mean, we're getting used to the idea of being, you know, a key swing state in a presidential election. But, you know, this is a battle this year that's going to be fought on two fronts, the presidential race and the Senate race. I don't think there's any question that Rob Portman, you know, the Republican incumbent, is going to have a whole lot more money to spend on this race than, say, Ted Strickland, who's obviously the front runner for the Democratic nomination. But still, it's probably going to be a very close race, and a lot of it's going to have to do with how well, say, a Hillary Clinton, assuming she wins the nomination, does in Ohio and could help a Ted Strickland maybe, you know, get over the hump. One of the things that the Portman campaign has done right now is they're targeting sort of swing voters who might be inclined to vote for Hillary Clinton for president, but could be convinced to vote for Rob Portman, a Republican, for the United States Senate. And they're targeting those voters.
Now, you mentioned Ted Strickland as the Democratic candidate. P.G. Sittenfeld, assistant councilman, is also running for that. You can't count him out. He's been tenacious.
No. I mean, he's working very hard. He's trying to raise as much money as he can. He has a super PAC that's helping him out to a certain extent. One of his problems is that he's not been able to get Ted Strickland out in the open, you know, where he can really go after him. He'd like to have statewide debates, and Strickland is obviously just not going to do that. I mean, there's nothing in it for him to give P.G. Sittenfeld a statewide platform.
And Joe Engels, my colleague here at the State House News Bureau, was out this morning speaking to Sherrod Brown, the other U.S. senator who's not running, and asked him, so what do you think about whether Ted Strickland and P.G. Sittenfeld should debate? And the response was, nice try. So,
yeah, right.
You know, not gonna bring him into this, I guess. But, I mean, it's important to note that Ted Strickland is the endorsed candidate by the Democrats, though P.G. Sittenfeld is... he's on the ballot. There is going to be a primary coming up in March. And so it's a tough situation for Sittenfeld to be in. And the idea that he is not going to get an opportunity to really go directly at Strickland. He's talked about Strickland's views on guns and some other things. And that's what he really wants to have the opportunity to address him on. And I don't think he's going to get it.
No, I mean, WCBO-TV and this radio station issued a formal invitation to both of those candidates to do a televised debate. I talked to Strickland about it on Friday, and he made it clear that it's not going to happen. He said, I am not going to be distracted from what I see as my job, and my job is running against Rob Portman and winning this U.S. Senate seat in the fall.
Howard, if it should end up being Ted Strickland versus Rob Portman, if that happens, what's the polling showing at this point?
Well, the polling kind of most of the year, it was consistently Ted Strickland had a 9-point lead and a 6-point lead. And then the last Quinnipiac poll that was done way back in October had that lead had shrunk to about 3 percentage points. So it seemed to be tightening up. I think, you know, one way or the other, it's going to be a close race.
Karen, is that your feel as well?
Absolutely. I think it is. I mean, the real issue here is the money and the difference between the two candidates in terms of the fundraising. You know, as a governor, a former governor, Ted Strickland has higher name recognition because governors tend to get better known to people than U.S. senators do. Mm-hmm. And Portman, you know, just hasn't had the opportunity to be out there as much as Strickland did when he was governor. And so, you know, that's why you still see Strickland doing so well, because people remember him. People know his name. But, you know, if the money spreads continues, I mean, we're talking like a 10-to-1 margin between the two of them, I think.
Yes.
It's a lot of money that separates these two candidates, and that's going to make a big difference. Not to say that the candidate that spends the most always wins. I mean, you can point to Sherrod Brown and Josh Mandel, more money was spent on Mandel and by Mandel than for and by Sherrod Brown, and Sherrod Brown still won. So, money doesn't buy the election, but certainly it buys a lot of airtime. It buys the opportunity to really talk about yourself a little bit more and talk about the other candidate as well.
Yeah, one of the problems, I mean, for Rob Portman is he is a household name in this part of the state. I mean, he represented in Congress and in the House for many years. He's been a senator. He's from here. But he does lag, as Karen says, in some name recognition or, you know, the ability of people to be able to judge whether or not they see view him favorably or unfavorably in other parts of the state.
Karen, one of the things, too, that's driving Ohio as a focal point in politics this year is the fact that the GOP is holding its convention in Cleveland.
Oh, yes.
And what do you think the GOP hopes to gain by doing that?
I don't know. I think at this point they'd just like to have it be a one-week convention and not be a brokered convention.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
That's right. Going to be very interesting if indeed it goes to the situation where there isn't a solid candidate coming in. You know, that could make things really, really historically crazy in a sense, because it would be something we haven't seen in, oh gosh, I don't even know. When would be the last time there was a brokered convention? It's been a while.
Well, yeah, we're going back to 1948. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think Cleveland really, having been up there for the Republican debate in August, I mean, Cleveland's very excited about the opportunity to be on this national stage. Mm-hmm. You know, but right now, of course, being that it's very uncertain, Cleveland's looking forward to the opportunity of people tuning in and really watching what happens. But it's I think we go into this really very uncertain.
It's interesting because, I mean, the parties tend to choose as venues cities that are in states which are key swing states. The Democrats did it with Philadelphia and Pennsylvania. The Republicans did it with Cleveland and Ohio. I've been to a whole lot of these things, 14 of them over the years, and I really can't think of one where the venue helped the candidate that much. I mean, if you go back 4 years ago, Mitt Romney was nominated in Tampa, Florida, which is obviously a key swing state. Well, he lost there. Not by much, but he lost. President Obama went to be renominated in Charlotte, North Carolina, which was another state that was in play. And he ended up losing North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's sort of, it's symbolic and symbolism, that sort of thing. But in terms of real votes, I don't know.
Now, how much do you think holding the convention in Cleveland is going to energize the Republican base in Ohio?
Well, I mean, it depends on who we nominate. I mean, if it's, say if it were John Kasich, it might energize him quite a bit.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think, no.
I hate to go out on a limb here,
I'm not predicting this, Karen. No.
I had to throw that
but
in.
But I think a lot of it depends on who they nominate.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, again, the last two presidential elections in Ohio have gone to Democrats. And the Democratic machine in Ohio, as much as the party itself has had trouble with statewide candidates, the national party machine, so to speak, has done very, very well in Ohio. And so I think, you know, that it's already gearing up and you're already seeing that now. And so there's work to do by the Republicans to really overcome that. And if indeed you've got a very hot Senate race going on at the same time, you know, it's going to be a really interesting year.
We will continue our discussion about the year ahead in politics with Karen Kassler and Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. What's ahead this year in politics? Joining us with a preview this afternoon, Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter.
Karen, you were talking before the break about the turnout machine in Ohio, particularly, for Democrats. And in the last few presidential elections, the last two anyway, much of that was driven by Barack Obama's machine, the Organizing for America machine, which was just unbelievable in terms of their skill at getting to voters, getting their message out, and getting them to the polls. Now, the question is going to be, say, if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, will she be able to replicate that kind of a get out the vote effort? I don't know. I think that remains to be seen.
I think that's an excellent question, and it's something that I think we're all watching for a little bit. I mean, arguably, the machine is already in place and gearing up because, you know, this campaign, Hillary Clinton announced, what, a year ago at least, maybe even more? And so, you know, these things do start long before, as we've seen, long before we even get to the primary vote.
I want to go back to what Karen was talking about before the break as well, Governor Kasich's prospects.
Yes.
So, Karen, you don't think they're too good?
Well, you know, when you look at the polls, not that the polls are always right, but right now it appears that Ted Cruz is going to win in Iowa, and Kasich has not spent a whole lot of time in Iowa. He really hasn't focused a whole lot on Iowa. He was in Iowa yesterday for one rally / town hall meeting. Mm-hmm. His focus has been primarily on New Hampshire, but he's, as he put it on Meet the Press on Sunday, he's 1 point out of second place. So I'm not good at math, but that makes him in third place. So that's not the best place for him to be in. And if he doesn't make this debate stage, there's another Republican debate. Our monthly Republican debate is next week. And so, you know, if he doesn't make the main stage there, it's really going to be hard for him to go ahead and move on out of New Hampshire. These numbers they're starting to be a problem for him.
And he's actually said that on the stump in New Hampshire, you know, that if, in fact, he doesn't do well on February 9th in New Hampshire primary, then he might as well go home.
Yeah.
But, you know, when he says, I'm 1 point out of second place, there's a pretty big gap between second place and first place if you look at those polls. And if you do like Real Clear Politics, the website, you know, which takes all these polls and does an average, he's running in fifth place right at the moment.
Yeah.
Howard, go ahead, Karen.
Oh no, it's looking grim. I think he was really hoping for the kind of campaign that John McCain had in 2008, where he had come roaring back. He was going to really catch fire in New Hampshire and go on. And he still could. I mean, I keep hearing from activists and partisans who say people in New Hampshire, they don't make up their minds till the last minute, that people will go into the booth and they're not going to pull the lever for Trump. And you know, we'll have to see. But February 9th is going to be a huge date for Kasich's campaign.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that has been unusual about Kasich's campaign that kind of sets it apart from some of the other campaigns, and I'd be interested to see if you agree with us, Karen, that he talks obviously a lot about Ohio and his record in Ohio, but he also talks about his time in Washington and his record in Washington, you know, as the budget chairman and the Armed Services Committee, and all, you know, I know how this place works. I can make Washington work. And, you know, most Republican presidential candidates are acting like, you know, Washington, D.C. is this horrible, evil place that, you know, they don't want to be associated with. But he seems to be running almost as, hey, I'm an insider. I know I know how to get stuff done.
And it's interesting because I think he tried that as a strategy from the beginning, that I have the experience. And he even said it on NBC's Meet the Press this week, that he thinks that the party almost has amnesia when it talks about how, you know, the Republicans criticized Barack Obama for having so little experience when he ran for president and, you know, got elected. And yet the leading candidates for the Republican nomination, Trump, Cruz, Rubio, Carson, have very little experience themselves. He said it felt like the party has amnesia. And so I think he's really tried to portray himself as the statesman, the experienced candidate. But in a year where experience doesn't appear to be selling very well, this is not necessarily something that's really helping him.
Right. And you're right. Everything comes down to February 9th for him. He's put almost all of his eggs in one basket, and that basket.
So that's his deadline, Howard?
Well, February 9th is New Hampshire primer.
Okay.
And he's put all his eggs in one basket, and if he doesn't do well there, he may as well come home.
Right. And I think at that point, I think the real question has to be asked. First of all, he doesn't have a whole ton of money. He's not broke, but he doesn't have a ton of money.
Right.
I don't think he has a huge super PAC backing him. I mean, Jeb Bush arguably is doing poorly. I mean, he's only doing slightly better than Kasich, but he's got a lot more money behind him. And so, you know, I think Kasich does have to make the decision. Do I want to come back and finish out the 2 years I've got here and or the 3 years I've got here and finish this out? You know, and there's work to do here in Ohio, people would say. So, you know, we'll
and
see
some
what
people,
happens after February 9th.
Yeah, and some people would look at him as a potential vice presidential candidate.
Oh, sure.
Although he says, I have absolutely no interest in that whatsoever.
They all say
which
that,
which is what
they
all say. Yeah, I mean, I've heard that, you know, 500 times over the years. But he might be very attractive as a running mate for somebody.
Yes, absolutely.
Karen, you were hitting on something really interesting, too. I mean, what effect has entering the race? What has this done to his governorship?
Well, I mean, you know, he hasn't been around a lot. And now, according to Quinnipiac, that has not necessarily made a difference in his job performance and his popularity. One thing that I think is very interesting is how his reelection has been spun in the national media, that he's a popular governor who was overwhelmingly reelected. And those of us who live in Ohio know that part of the reason he was overwhelmingly reelected is because we had a Democratic candidate who didn't do so well and kind of self-destructed halfway through the campaign. So I think, you know, I think Kasich would eventually, you know, he would finish out a second term here saying, I was a popular governor. I was overwhelmingly reelected. I got to do the things that I wanted to do. And certainly he's gotten a lot of the agenda items that he wanted to get done accomplished. In fact, he did that in his first term, arguably maybe to set himself up for a presidential run. But, you know, that's funny. The Ohio story that he tells is really not selling. It's not catching fire with voters nationally. And a lot of people have noted during these debates and everything, when he brings up Ohio, there's kind of a sentiment, if you follow it on Twitter, for instance, that, oh, here he goes with Ohio again. Who cares about Ohio? Well, this is what he knows. And this is where he really puts his record and anchors what his accomplishments are.
Yeah, there's no question that he's been popular in Ohio lately. He has accomplished much of his agenda in Ohio. But I'll tell you the truth, and I don't know if you would agree with this or not, Karen, but I read some of the national stories about Kasich, and I read them and I say, who is this guy they're talking about?
I know, that's exactly what I was just thinking. Who is this person?
Who is this guy? I mean, this isn't the guy we know.
You're right. And sometimes you'll see the stories. There was one in the Atlantic and a couple other outlets have written, especially right after he announced, where they talk about him being brusque and nasty and bitter. And, you know, and that's more like the Kasich that we see. He's very he can be very gruff.
He can
be very, very, you know, direct in his comments. And so, you know, it's been interesting to see the Kasich evolution through this whole debate process and see which Kasich kind of shows up for each debate. So to speak.
Yeah. Howard, if he bows out before the convention, do you think the party might toss him a key spot during the convention as a compensation prize?
Well, I mean, obviously,
if he doesn't get that VP spot,
you know, he'll be officially the host of the Republican National Convention as the governor of the state in which it's held. You know, he and Frank Jackson, the mayor of Cleveland. But, you know, I think the only bone that they could throw him is the vice presidency that would mean anything.
And I think that's part of this whole idea of the experience that he's talked about is that, you know, that's the kind of thing that he could sell as, hey, you know, Joe Biden had so much experience that backed up Barack Obama. You know, he could almost sell himself as a candidate. I've got the experience that a less experienced candidate would have. I just don't know that you could see really a Trump Kasich ticket, you know, a Cruz Kasich ticket, a Rubio Kasich ticket. People have actually talked about though.
That Rubio Kasich ticket would almost make sense, and your argument would make particular sense there, because, you know, you could say, hey, okay, Rubio's a real smart young kid, but he's kind of wet behind the ears, and I'm the I'm the old hand, I'm the pro, I've been in Washington, I know how it works, and I can help this administration.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. You can also email talk@wvxu.org. And Mike from Clifton sent us an email, and he wanted to know, Howard, if you could comment. We were talking about Ted Strickland and the race for the Senate earlier, and he wanted to know if you could comment about rumors about Strickland's health.
Tell you the truth, I don't know of any health problems that he has.
And I know age has been one thing that's come up with
yeah, well, he's obviously Ted Strickland, older, but... yes. I don't know of any. I don't know. Karen, are you?
No, I actually see him around Columbus every now and then. He actually looks better now than he did when he was governor.
I mean, he looks good, and I've seen him here, and I've talked to him on the phone, and he seems perfectly fine to me. He's been campaigning around the state, seems to have the energy for it, so I don't know.
Well, and I think that the whole idea of the rumors, those came about even when he was running against Kasich, that there were some questions about some of...
Right.
And so I think that this is part of the same. I mean, certainly he's older, but, you know, I have to agree with you, Howard. I haven't heard anything specifically rumors or confirmed facts, and certainly if I had heard rumors, I wouldn't be talking about him on the radio.
No.
Howard, the Ohio's primary is coming up, what is it, March 19th? Is that is
March
that the date?
15th.
March 15th, the date for Ohio's primary. Now, who's going to be on the ballot on the GOP side?
Well,
did everybody make it in?
Well, yeah. I don't know how many of them will be actively campaigning by that time.
Will still be there at that point, yeah.
But there were 11 of them. There are a couple of them who didn't file delegate slates in all of the 16 congressional districts. So, you know, like around here, you might not see Santorum in the first congressional district ballot. I mean, it's a long ballot. And the thing you got to remember about the Ohio Republican presidential primary, the Republican presidential primary, is that it is a winner-take-all deal. Mm-hmm. And back in October, and Karen, you'll remember this, legislature changed the date from March 8th to March 15th. Why did they do that? Because the Republican National Committee had rules saying that if you held primaries before March 15th, you had to divide up your delegates proportionately. Based on the primary vote. And if you held off until March 15th, you could do a winner-take-all primary. And this was seen sort of as, okay, this is going to help John Kasich because, of course, John Kasich is going to be the favorite going into his home state primary and could walk away with all 66 Republican delegates. Well, that's not a certain thing now, but, you know, it sounded good at the time.
Well, and the thing is now, what's interesting is that was exactly why they moved it to the 15th.
Yeah.
And what's really frustrating is that primaries are usually in May. And so it's very confusing for people who are wondering when the primary actually is. And March 15th is not a typical kind of primary date. But we also now have to compete against Florida, Illinois, Missouri, and North Carolina on that same date. So, you know, there's a lot of states and a lot of delegates that are in play there, arguably.
Yeah, some years ago they had decided to move up, you know, in presidential years only, up to March, so that Ohio theoretically could have more to say about who the nominees would be.
Yeah, to make us part of the Super Tuesday primary.
Yeah, be part of the Super Tuesday thing and you know, have more of an impact. When the presidential primaries were in May, almost always we were totally useless because it had already been decided by them.
Yeah.
What about on the Democratic side, Howard? Who made the ballot there?
Well,
it's an easier list, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a shorter
list. With one name that you would say, wait a minute, he didn't make it?
Now, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and a gentleman by the name of Rocky De La Fuente of San Diego, California, qualified.
But no Martin O'Malley.
Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland, came up I think a couple hundred signatures short.
Yep.
And will not be on the ballot. And tonight, in 16 locations in each congressional district, Democrats will be gathering to elect their delegate slates for both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders.
Now, there's nothing O'Malley can do. I mean, he didn't make
done.
It. And that's it. Yes,
that's it.
In Ohio.
Yeah, you didn't have enough signatures, you're out.
So who was the third person?
A fellow by the name of Rocky De La Fuente.
Okay. What do we know and about him?
Not much. Not well, much, Mark.
I was just going to say that, you know, we talk about the candidates who are running for president like they're the only ones.
Yeah.
There are a ton
they're
of
a
people
mess
who run.
Yeah, I mean, if you go on the list, there are at least 20-some people who have said that they are Democratic candidates for president and have filed papers of some kind somewhere. You know, so, you know, it's but there are only certain people that we talk about because there are only certain people who have a realistic chance of being actually being a nominee or being the president of the United States.
Karen, the Ohio Democratic Party, it's had its share of struggles recently, lost the governor's race, lost some other statewide contests.
All of them.
Yeah, every one of them. They really got hammered. What's the state of the party at this point? What are its prospects?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, as we often say in professional sports in Ohio, this is a rebuilding year. And, you know, it's I think there is some rebuilding going on. I think the party is really struggling to try to find the candidates that they're going to have. I mean, you've got 2018 that's just around the corner, which nobody yeah. wants to hear that, but it really is. And so the candidates, the Republicans have already started jockeying for their positions. You've got Mary Taylor and Mike DeWine and John Houston, who all want to run for governor on the Republican side. And right now, I don't know that I've really heard any big names on the Democratic yeah, side who want to run. Yeah. And so the time is growing short for Democratic candidates to start launching their campaigns and really getting the fundraising together. That's what a lot of it's about at this point. And so Democrats are really on a short timeline to try to build up a team that can take on the Republicans who have gotten the name recognition. They're the incumbents. They're the people who people have gotten to know over the last 8 years. They're going to be running for new offices. Democrats have to start moving on that.
Yeah, and Democrats in Ohio, I mean, truly have to build a new generation of candidates, statewide candidates, I think. And I think to a certain extent that's happening. There are people out there who are, you know, likely to be statewide candidates someday. I think Nan Whaley, the mayor of Dayton, is one of them. You know, possibly someday, not anywhere in the near future, John Cranley, you know, in Cincinnati. P.G. Sittenfeld, as long as he doesn't burn all of his bridges behind him in this race, you know, he's a young man, 31 years old, you know, could make a great candidate for statewide office sometime. But, you know, we'll see.
So, Karen, what are going to be the big issues at the Ohio State House this year?
Well, I was just talking to the House and Senate leaders right before the break. They don't come back for a while. They don't even have committee hearings for at least the next couple of weeks. And the fact the first time we may really see them talking about this stuff may be at the end of January. They sit down with a bunch of reporters for an Associated Press talking session here. And I think some of the big issues are going to be medical marijuana. They realize after this vote, even though issue three went down in flames, there's a real strong interest among Ohioans to get something done on medical marijuana. So I think that's going to come about. You've got a couple of issues related to abortion, such as the bill on fetal remains from abortions. That's going to come up. You've got the capital budget that's coming up. You've got some other issues. I know that on the Senate side, they've talked about controlling college costs and an infrastructure bond issue for sewer and water quality projects. So there's a lot of stuff going on. And I should also mention one other thing, an unemployment compensation bill that's going to be a big deal. It changes some of the rules, how long you can get jobless benefits and how much you can get paid. That's going to be a big one, I think.
Karen, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you and Happy New Year.
Happy
Same
New
you,
Year,
Karen. Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler. Coming up, WVXU reporters Howard Wilkinson and Bill Reinhart will have a preview of local politics in 2016. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and we continue to look ahead at what's coming up this year in politics with a preview of local races and issues. WVXU reporters Howard Wilkinson and Bill Reinhardt are in the studio, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Bill, good to see you this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
And Howard, thank you for coming back. You weren't going anywhere in the first place.
Yeah.
Bill, Hamilton County is going to have a new commissioner sworn in later this week. Colerain Township Trustee Dennis Dieters.
Correct.
He is going to replace Greg Hartman, who resigned.
Yes.
Right, okay. And he's going to have to run against Democrat Denise Driehaus.
Yes. A few weeks ago, Greg Hartman, the president of the Hamilton County Commissioners, surprised a lot of people by saying, "I am not going to seek re-election in 2016. At that point, Hamilton County Republicans started casting around, looking for a replacement for him. And then, just as they identified Dennis Dieters as a potential candidate, Greg Hartman surprised everyone again and said, "You know what? I'm not even going to finish out my term. I've kind of had enough. It's time to get some new blood in here. Let's give Dennis Dieter a chance to get his name recognized, even though at least part of his name is already recognized, as he's the brother of Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters, and he does have the middle name of Joe Dieters." Of course, not long after that, there was a big fight. Well, maybe not a fight, but a scrap at the Hamilton County Board of Elections.
It was a fight.
A kerfuffle.
It was a fight.
It was a
kerfuffle.
Yeah.
Over whether he could use his middle name, Joseph, on the ballot, and that went to the Secretary of State, who ruled, yes, that's part of his legal name, and so that can appear on the ballot.
Yeah, the reason they thought about this was because the Democrats looked at every public document they could find, and they couldn't find one that said Dennis Joseph Dieters. They could find Dennis P. Dieters or Dennis Dieters or, you know. But Alex Triantafilou, the Republican Party chairman, came up with his birth certificate, which said Dennis Patrick Joseph Dieters. And they made the argument that since Joseph is part of his legal name, he should be able to use it. John Husted, the Secretary of State, agreed, broke the tie, so he will be on the ballot as Dennis Joseph Dieters. And right below him on the ballot will be his brother, Joseph T. Dieters, running for re-election as prosecutor.
So the conventional wisdom is obviously you're going to be a little more familiar. Voters are going to associate Dennis Joseph Dieters with Joe Dieters. But my question is, will people get confused and think, why is Joe Dieters running for two different offices? Can I only vote for one Joe Dieters?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a, you know, I'm not sure why Dennis Dieters wants to do this. You know, because I could see it cut both ways, for, you know, it could help him or hurt him. But nonetheless, that's what he wanted and that's what he got. So, you know, we shall see. One thing about Greg Hartman is Greg Hartman had $300,000 in the bank for a reelection campaign. And the Republican Party had made that their local priority number one of getting him reelected. And you have to assume that now Dennis Dieters is priority number one.
Where will that money go?
What,
Greg's? Greg's coffers.
Well, I talked to Greg about that, and you know, Greg's going to help Dennis. I mean, he's going to keep part of his campaign fund because I don't think Greg Hartman is out of politics for good. I think he's out of politics for now, and that he may run for office again in the future. So he can hang on to some of that money and keep that account open. But he'll help the party. He'll help the Republican Party. He'll help Dennis Dieters and anybody else he wants to contribute to. But he's not going to close out that campaign account.
So, Howard, how do you see the race between Dennis Dieters and Denise Driehaus shaping up?
It's hard to say. I mean, a lot of us, it goes back to the discussion we had about Sittenfeld and Strickland, Strickland and Portman. It's going to depend a lot on how, say, Hillary Clinton does in Hamilton County. You know, if she can win this county and help drag, you know, other Democrats into office. Denise Driehaus has a pretty good political name herself. You know, she's been in the Ohio House now for four terms.
She can't run again because of term limits, right?
Exactly. Her brother was Steve Driehaus, a former congressman. So, and it's a well-known name, and she's going to have plenty of resources, too. I don't think she's going to have as much money as Dieters, but she's going to have quite a bit, and she's going to have a pretty good organization behind her.
Right now, the commission has two Republicans, one Democrat. So let's test your knowledge of history between the two of you. How long has it been since Democrats controlled the Hamilton County Commission?
About four years.
Yeah, it was when
David Pepper,
2010,
and, Todd Portune. Oh, 2010. Okay, so yeah. 6 years.
2010 was when David Pepper decided he wasn't going to run for re-election as commissioner, and ran instead for state auditor and lost. And that's when we got Chris Monzel into office as a county commissioner, and the commission went from two Democrats and one Republican to two Republicans and one Democrat.
Or back to two
back
Republicans
to.
And
oh,
one
yes.
Democrat.
Yes.
It wasn't very long to have two Democrats and one Republican on there.
No, because it had been about 40 years in between.
So there's the possibility the Hamilton County Commission could go back to two Democrats and one Republican. Bill, what do you think that would mean for how the commission would be run and the kinds of issues they would address?
I think you might see a little more influence for the city of Cincinnati if that were the case, because Cincinnati is a lot more Democratic than the rest of the county. You look at a lot of the voting trends, and because Hamilton County is purple, it's the city that votes Democrat, and it's the suburbs, the exurbs, if you will, that vote Republican. So you might see the commission, you might see city-county relations improve a bit. I mean, they've been rather rocky, especially with MSD as of late. But things like that, Howard, help me out here.
No, I agree.
I
absolutely.
Think you're on the right track, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you had, say, Denise Driehaus and Todd Portune, I think there would be much more discussions between the city council and the mayor of Cincinnati. There'd be less contention. They might be able to work out this MSD problem. But, you know, that has to happen first. I mean, you have to have an election first.
So what do you see if Republicans retain control, Howard?
Well, I think, Dennis Dieters, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, he's been Coleraine Township trustee. I don't think you're going to see a great difference in his philosophy and Greg Hartman's philosophy. They're both, you know, conservative Republicans, you know, kind of fiscal conservative types. So I don't see a great deal of difference between the two of them.
I'm going to be talking with Dennis Dieters a little later this week. I'll ask him.
Okay, very good, yeah. Bill. Hey, what are the other key races and issues to keep an eye on locally?
Well, I mean, there's some pretty good primary races, you know, for state representative, especially on the Democratic side. Denise Driehaus obviously can't run for re-election to the Ohio House, so she's running for county commissioner, which means her seat is up for grabs, and she's in the 31st Ohio House District, which is kind of the center city and some suburbs, and there's a whole mob of candidates on the Democratic side because it is a very Democratic district, and whoever wins the Democratic primary is probably going to be the state representative. So right now you have got no less than six Democrats running. And it's kind of hard to Bridget Kelly, who's got a lot of support from, she used to be on Norwood City Council, got a lot of support from organized labor. She's running. Paul Booth, who was former city councilman, former NAACP president, he's running. There's a newcomer by the name of Ben Lindy, who is the executive director of Teach for America. And his campaign put out a press release the other day saying that he had already raised $102,000 for this campaign. Which, if that's the case, that's just extraordinary amount
that,
of money.
That would be, yeah.
For a state representative race. So, you know, there's going to be some good primary races. One of them's going to happen to, you know, the county recorder's office, too, on the Republican side. You know, Wayne Coates, the Democrat, is the incumbent. He's unopposed. And you have two pretty familiar Republican names running in the Republican primary. One is former judge Norbert Nadel, who's had a whole lot of high-profile cases over the years, but he couldn't run for re-election as judge because of the Ohio age limit law. And then he's opposed by Charlie Winburn, the Cincinnati City Councilman. And Winburn's going to raise a whole lot of money. And that could be an interesting race, you know, between the two of them.
He also mentioned Prosecutor Joe Dieters is running for re-election. Who's running against him?
Well,
do we know?
What time is it?
Yeah, right.
Does it change that often?
No. It changed yesterday, as a matter of fact. They, you know, the Democrats didn't have anybody, excuse me, by the December 16th filing deadline. So they talked a woman by the name of Liz Tighe, who is a lawyer, obviously, into running as a write-in candidate. And she was going to file yesterday at 1:30. And then she suddenly decided she wasn't going to run. But she did suggest another lawyer by the name of Alan Triggs. And he did file as a write-in candidate. Recruited by the Democratic Party. Now, all that he has to do in the primary is get 50 write-in votes, at least 50 write-in votes, and he can run in the fall against Dieters as the Democratic candidate for prosecutor. If you can follow that,
that whole line of things. Yeah. That's where we stand at this point on that. Bill, we had the Cincinnati Parks Levy that was defeated last November. What's the chance we could see a county Parks Levy this year? Are you hearing anything?
I've heard nothing along those
Zero
lines.
About
Have
that.
You?
No. It's just curious
Howard,
if
anything?
You heard anything.
No. Okay, I mean, good. I've heard people suggest that, but not any serious talk about
it. Yeah, there's always, discussion. There's always the idea out there that city and county parks should become a metro park type
right.
program like they have in Butler County or Montgomery County or up
Cleveland.
In Cuyahoga County.
Oh, yeah.
But there hasn't been any big actual push for that. Just occasional, hey, you know what we ought to do? Well, read my blog about it. That sort of thing.
But nothing official.
Nothing official.
Howard, go ahead.
I think we also ought to make note, since we were talking about county commission races, there are two of them. This year, you know.
Oh, Todd Portune is up for re-election.
Todd Portune, the Democrat, is up for re-election. And his opponent is Andrew Pappas, who is an Anderson Township trustee. Not well known, not very well known outside of Republican circles and Anderson Township, but he's taking on Portune.
Howard, I wanted to ask you about this earlier, too, and it's still kind of a local issue. You've got Ohio's 8th Congressional District, which has no representation whatsoever since John Boehner resigned. So
yes, none.
What is going on there?
Well, what's going on is you have 11 Republican candidates. Or no, I'm sorry, there's actually 15 of them now. Yeah.
Sounds like the presidential slate.
Yeah, 15 Republican candidates. One of them dropped out early. Dropping it from 16 to 15, Roger Reynolds, who's the auditor of Butler County, and was seen by many people to be the favorite. But he suddenly dropped out and endorsed Tim Derrickson, who's a state representative from Hanover Township in Butler County. And he seems to be the new favorite, at least the best known, and the one who's going to be able to probably to raise the most money. But when you have 11, if you're going to have 11 candidates on the ballot, it's just toss them up in the air and see who
lands where.
Right.
What about on the Democratic side?
Well, Democrats have won. He's a young man, 25 years old, named Corey Foister. Has not run for office before. He has a website in which he sort of opines on kind of liberal Democratic positions. And, he's seems like a,
earnest
young fellow. But, no experience as a candidate, obviously. And, he's 25 years old, which is the minimum age for a United States congressman. But you got to understand the 8th Congressional District, which runs from Butler County all the way up to Mercer County, is one of the most heavily Republican districts in this state.
Well, Howard and Bill, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
WVXU's Howard Wilkinson and Bill Reinhardt. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai. And the technical director was Rick Andres. I'm Mark Haney.